This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Little more on the Hunter Biden stuff in our DOJ. We have a pro-life activist tonight. We have some eye-popping stuff about COVID and COVID's origins. This is a really interesting show tonight, and I'm right. Give them bread and circuses, and they'll never revolt. You've heard of that before, right? Most people have heard of that before. That's from a Roman poet. Don't worry about who it is. It's not important for our conversation here. But what is important is, what did he mean by that? We'll talk about the Hunter Biden stuff in a moment. Where's that going? Well, here's where it's going. If the people are upset, or if the people are living under a corrupt system, and they know it's a corrupt system, you must placate them. You don't have to give them justice. You don't have to clean up the system. You don't have to change your ways. You don't have to do any of those things if you're in power. Find something to distract them. Find something to placate them, to calm them down. If they're angry, hungry masses are in front of you and they say, "We're starving," just show up with a wagon and toss out some loaves of bread, and they'll go from being angry to thanking you. "Wow, you were so generous. Thanks for the free bread." Stalin. You obviously know who Joseph Stalin is. Totalitarian dictator, murdered almost as many people as Mao did, horrific human being. You know that. And Stalin controlled everything, didn't he? Stalin controlled the news. Stalin controlled the arts. Stalin controlled the economy. Every single thing was managed. Nobody was allowed to step out of line. But did you know there was an opposition party? An opposition party to Stalin? Did you know that he allowed it? He encouraged it? And in fact, he organized it? Now, why would he do that? Why would this human being who organized and controlled everything, everything censored, everything is run through Stalin, why would he allow an opposition party? They even would make some public statements that disagreed with Stalin. Stalin would kill his own family members for disagreeing with him, and he allowed an opposition party to do that? Why would he do that? Well, because the people needed to be placated. Every tyrant knows instinctively that he can abuse the people, he can abuse the people around him, he can do whatever he wants to a point. But you can't get the people too mad. Just make sure they don't ever dial it up to 11. Turn it down a little bit. You have to placate them with something. No, it's not one party rule here in the Soviet Union. What? Look, the opposition party's right there. You have options for sure. What's going on with Hunter Biden? With the Hunter Biden sweetheart deal? Well, what's going on is the system has witnessed your anger. They're very aware of how angry you are, that there is no justice system for the elites, certainly the elite Democrats. They all get off scot-free. If you're Donald Trump, if you're a Republican, they're going to lock you in a cage forever. If you're a Democrat, do whatever you want. They know you're mad. They've seen you be mad. They closely monitor social media. They're listening to all of our phone calls, after all. They know you're angry. They understand that. And they know you're getting a little too angry. Man, the people are getting spicy. How do we dial that down a bit? Well, how you dial it down a bit is you bust Hunter Biden. You say, "Yeah, Hunter Biden's a criminal. Man, I can't believe this tax stuff. Whoa! And that gun charge? Ugh. You know what? He's going to have to enter a plea deal." But while we weren't looking, everything kind of got swept up inside of that plea deal, and they washed it all away. You see, Hunter Biden is not just a tax evader. Hunter Biden is a felon, and so is his father. These are human beings who've used their position of power to take bribes from foreign entities to enrich themselves and sell out the United States of America. By all rights, Hunter Biden should never see the outside of a prison cell again. And if you or I did what Hunter Biden did, we would not. We'd be in Fort Leavenworth for the rest of our lives. But they know they can't do that. And they also can't just let him off scot-free. Hey, he's innocent, because no one would believe that. So what do? They pat you on the head and they say, look, we got him, guys. We got him. Do you remember that child custody case? He was going through in Arkansas, the stripper he knocked up, and then, of course, he ran out on her, abandoned his child. He's a real quality human being. And then he was going through a civil case there. And this civil case was supposed to be the case where all his lies were exposed, because we were going to get to dig into all of his finances. But while you were sleeping, all that went away, too. Vanished. Gone. Joe Biden was asked about it and gave the same canned, meaningless answer he always has.
I'm very proud of my son.
Very proud. He's very proud of his son. Very proud of... What does that mean? Well, Joe Biden understands exactly how this game works. Remember when he was asked about it time and time again on the campaign trail? And what did he say time and time again? No one said he did anything wrong. Who said he did anything wrong? What does that mean? I mean, it's nothing. Everyone said he did something wrong. What are you talking about? But Joe understands that we live in a late-stage republic, a completely corrupt system, and he'll be allowed to give these canned answers, and he'll have the entire U.S. media out there running cover for him like they have been doing.
And it shows that no one is above the law, which is important, not even the president's son.
The fact that son of the president was investigated by the government and charged is actually evidence that no one is above the law in America. That's a good thing.
Obviously, you're already hearing a lot of shouting, oh, sweetheart deal, oh, this, oh, that.
This is not a sweetheart deal. It's a deal. I think it's a good deal for Hunter Biden in that he will stay out of prison and end up with only two misdemeanors on his record. But it's certainly not a sweetheart deal out of line with what happens in the rest of the country.
They focus on this and say, oh, my God, two-tier standard of justice. He got a sweetheart deal. And you're like, guys, I mean, you just sound like morons.
And yet, if this wasn't Hunter Biden, it is likely he wouldn't have been prosecuted at all.
It indicates that the prosecutor's gone out of his way to charge everything that could have been charged.
He went out of his way to charge everything that could have been charged. Is that a fact? Well, that's funny, because I remember, maybe you remember this too, I remember this laptop. I remember Hunter Biden had a laptop. Do you remember this? Hunter Biden had a laptop. And because he's a degenerate and has serious mental problems, he not only commits an endless amount of crimes, he records all of them. Hunter Biden apparently has never committed a crime that he doesn't want to record on his phone or wherever he records it. And not only does he record all of his crimes, he uploads all of them onto his laptop. That alone is wild. But then, this is the best part, Hunter Biden, with the criminal laptop, the laptop with evidence of all of his crimes, he then takes it down to a computer repair shop and says, hey, update the hard drive or something, or whatever he told them, and just kind of left it there, just forgot about it. And computer repair shops all have this disclaimer that they get to take possession of your laptop if you leave it there for so long, they never hear from you. And he just left it there. And soon this computer guy gets a hold of all these crimes of Hunter Biden. And he understandably calls the FBI and says, the son of the vice president, then Vice President Joe Biden, is a felon, and I have all the evidence here. And the FBI says, oh my goodness, that's terrible. Hang on, let's go check that out. 2019, the FBI went down and took possession of Hunter Biden's laptop containing evidence of his crimes and his father's crimes. Now, whatever did happen to that laptop? Whatever did happen to it? Are they still looking into it? Well, here's Hunter Biden's lawyer.
Do you have any idea if Hunter Biden's laptop had anything to do with this investigation? Was it used?
I don't. No, I don't. I mean,
were you ever asked about it?
I can't recall being asked about it, to be honest with you. But there's nothing about the situation that's been filed that has a thing to do with the laptop.
Why not?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the prosecutors.
They didn't even ask about it. Laptop? What? Never heard of her. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a fascinating interview for you next. I'm excited for this one. Dr. Aaron Cariotti, maybe you haven't heard of him before. You will remember his name after this because COVID, we don't talk about COVID enough anymore. Where did it come from, after all? You want to hear some amazing things? You're about to. Get ready for that. Before we hear from the doctor, let's talk about you and the timeshare you think you're stuck in. You're not stuck in it. You're not. You're really not. The timeshare companies are lying. They're lying to you. That timeshare company that tells you you're stuck in your timeshare, you're not allowed out, you can't get out, you're stuck in your timeshare. None of that stuff is true. You can get out of your timeshare. All you have to do is make a phone call. Can you make a phone call? What do you think would be easier? Keep paying the annual fees, keep paying the special assessments, or pick up your phone and make one phone call. Because Lone Star Transfer will get you out, legally and permanently. They succeed 99% of the time. Is that not incredible? You're one phone call away from freedom. Call 844-310-2646 and get out of your timeshare, all right? 844-310-2646. Go now. Ever heard of Ben Hu? He's known as patient zero for COVID. But that's actually not the most interesting thing, not the patient zero thing, and not his name Ben Hu. Not that there's anything wrong with that name. What's interesting is actually where he worked. He worked at the Wuhan Institute of Technology. And did you know that Dr. Fauci's NIH funded the man's research? Interesting little tidbits, no? Let's ask the doctor about that. Joining me now, Dr. Aaron Cariotti, author of the book, The New Abnormal. Doctor, okay, I'm not a medical expert. I don't understand gain of function research and viruses and whatnot, but that sure sounds to me like it came from the lab.
That's right. This is one more fingerprint, one more big piece of forensic evidence suggesting that this virus that caused COVID came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where they were doing gain of function research on coronaviruses. We knew now, we knew that already. Now we know that the first three patients, one of whom you mentioned, first three patients in the world with COVID were all working at that lab. So the breadcrumbs are all leading in this direction. There's fingerprints on the actual DNA of the virus itself, suggesting that part of the spike protein was inserted in there in a way that can't be accounted for by a naturally occurring virus. It looks like it was engineered. So we have all these pointers basically guiding us in the same direction toward the same conclusion. And we also know that this information has been known by our government for quite some time. And so I think the real shocking thing is, well, it is shocking that this virus came from a lab, but another shocking thing is that our government has been keeping very important information from us in regards to the origins of COVID. You might wonder why they're doing that. And I would suggest that probably the main reason that they're doing that, the main reason that a complicated cover-up was orchestrated trying to discredit the lab leak hypothesis, was that it implicates our own federal government, namely the NIH, and specifically Anthony Fauci. His division of the NIH was funding gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology through an intermediary called the EcoHealth Alliance. So this private nonprofit was getting NIH grant funding, and that money was then sent to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And that has also now been clearly established through FOIA requests and other communications that people have recovered. And so our own government seems to be implicated, and specifically the NIH and Anthony Fauci's division of the NIH seems to be implicated in funding the research that created the virus that caused COVID.
Okay. Help me understand something here, because I admit I'm weapons grade ignorant when it comes to this stuff. In what universe is it appropriate to send taxpayer money to a virology institute in China to create a virus that's actually more deadly. That sounds like James Bond supervillain stuff, but apparently this is something we do. Is this something we do?
Well, this is something that we wanted to do. Some people in our government wanted to do on our own shores. So initially, this kind of research was being done by a guy named Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina. And then during the Obama administration, it was discovered that the NIH was funding gain-of-function research at UNC. And that grant was shut down as being too dangerous. And basically what happened in the wake of that was funding EcoHealth Alliance to do this work at the Wuhan Institute of Virology seemed to be the workaround that the NIH came up with to continue doing what it wanted to do. And your question is a very good one. Like, in what crazy universe do we want to make viruses more deadly? Do we want to create pathogens that can cause something like a worldwide pandemic? And the supposed justification for this research, which many people seem quite obsessed with, is what they call dual use. Okay, we can use it to make a biological weapon, but we can also use it to try to defend ourselves against biological weapons. So it's this weird kind of arms race. If the Chinese are doing it, then we have to have somebody in their lab to spy on them. That's sort of one theory, that this was a failed intelligence operation. That's why we were funding the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Or we were trying to get data on what they were doing there so that we could try to develop so-called countermeasures like vaccines. But the problem with this arms race when you're talking about viruses is, you know, you could use the analogy of nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are obviously enormously dangerous, but a nuclear weapon doesn't walk out of a lab on someone's shoe and accidentally get detonated one day. The problem of trying to contain these viruses so that you don't have an accidental leak is an ongoing issue that has plagued this kind of research from the very beginning. There's always safety issues with these labs, and that, you know, the slightest mistake can cause a complete disaster. So this arms race mentality that they're doing it, therefore we have to do it, is, I think, ludicrous. This kind of research has to be shut down worldwide. And if we believe other people are doing it, then we need to put international pressure on countries that are trying to do gain of function research in order to stop that sort of research, because this is not something, as we now know, that can be contained. This is not something that can be controlled. This is something that's just so extraordinarily dangerous that, in my view, it should never be done.
Doctor, I'm going to ask the dumbest question you've ever been asked in your life, but I can't get the question out of my head, so I'm going to ask it anyway. If they made this virus worse on purpose, if they tried to make it a weapon on purpose, for whatever reason, as you just elaborated on some of the reasons, why isn't it deadlier? And I'm not dismissing the deadliness of COVID, especially for fat people or old people with pre-existing conditions. I understand all that.
Yep.
But it is a virus that well north of 99% of people survive. It's the sniffles for a couple days. If you made a bioweapon, why isn't it more weapony?
Yeah. Well, I think the first answer to that is that we may not be very good at making bioweapons, because you need to hit a sweet spot that is actually very difficult to hit with viruses. It's really hard to get a viral pandemic that has a really high mortality rate. And the reason for that is that if the virus kills too many people too quickly, it burns out. You get an outbreak of like the Zika virus, where you get a localized outbreak, there are some deaths, but the virus can't spread much beyond that because it kills people before those people can encounter a whole bunch of other people where they spread the virus. So if a virus is more deadly, it tends not to spread very far. If a virus is able to spread further, it tends to be less deadly. That's just the nature of viruses. And I mean, COVID was obviously a disaster for old and frail people. Fortunately, the infection fatality rate was extremely low for people under the age of 65, and it was virtually zero for children. So we can be grateful for that. Nevertheless, this should be a warning shot across the bow regarding just how dangerous this research is. If we tinkered in such a way that we hit a sweet spot, or a sour spot would be a better way of putting it, where you get a virus that can spread and infect a lot of people before it kills them. Maybe it kills them, but it kills them more slowly than most viruses that are really deadly. That could be potentially dangerous. That could be the kind of combination where people can have the virus long enough to spread it, but eventually succumb to it. And that would be obviously a disaster, especially if the virus is capable of killing younger and healthier people.
What does it gain? And maybe this is a question I should ask a military man, but what does it help a nation to create a virus like that? Let's say someone did hit that sweet spot and it's deadly, but not too deadly, and it gets passed around. And let's say you're China and you want to give that to America. It's a freaking virus. It's coming back to your country. It's always coming back to you. So does it help you? A nuclear bomb is at least only where you drop the stupid thing. The virus is going everywhere.
Well, try to wrap your head around this idea. Each of us has a unique genetic code, but people with a common ethnicity often share features of genetic code in common. And so there is this idea floating around out there in biosecurity circles that maybe we could engineer a virus that selectively targets people with a certain kind of DNA in common. And basically, there's an idea out there that perhaps we can engineer viruses to target particular ethnic groups or particular racial groups. We don't know if that's possible. At this point, we don't know how selective such a virus would be, how much collateral damage it would cause to people who, you know, are not part of the target group. But yeah, I mean, there's some really insane thinking. I don't know any other way to put it. There's some really insane thinking among people that tinker with these viruses. It's hard for ordinary people to even understand why we would want to monkey around with these things in the first place. Even if we're thinking about creating a weapon, it seems like obviously this is not the kind of weapon that you can contain, but there are people that have this sort of pipe dream that maybe we can tinker with these to make them really, really sort of targeted to a certain type of person, or to, you know, protect ourselves against the virus with a vaccine and then launch it on the rest of the world, this sort of thing.
Yeah, we are our own worst enemy. Tell me about this book, please, before I let you go.
Yeah. So The New Abnormal is subtitled The Rise of the Biomedical Security State. And it's an account not just of what happened to COVID, but of the public health infrastructure that was rolled out during COVID and how it's going to be used in the future. And I'm specifically concerned about the militarization of public health, about the use of digital technologies of surveillance and control, and about backing up public health measures using the police powers of the state. So we saw these three elements manifesting during COVID. And even though the worst of the COVID pandemic is thankfully behind us, this whole infrastructure is still in place, just waiting for the next declared emergency. And I think it's important for Americans to understand basically how the next state of emergency is going to be used to justify increased measures of control, of surveillance, and potentially loss of civil liberties in ways that make the COVID pandemic seem tame by comparison.
Yeah, that's scary. Doctor, thank you so much. Please come back. That was outstanding. I'm going to pick that book
up. Thanks, Jess.
All right. Jerome Powell. We forget about Jerome Powell, don't we? Tremendous amounts of damage it's already been done. And there's more. We have Jerome Powell updates for you next. Before we get to that, you know what? Maybe while we get to that, because once we hear from Jerome Powell, it's probably going to be best if your dog is close by. You might want to snuggle with your dog, because that's going to be comforting. Your dog needs some rough greens, though, because you want to snuggle with your dog for as many years as possible, right? And you want your dog to be healthy for all those years. Well, your dog can't be healthy if your dog doesn't get nutrition. Just like you, your dog's a living thing. You need nutrition. Your dog does too, and he doesn't get it from his dog food. Your dog needs Rough Greens, digestive enzymes, vitamins, minerals, probiotics. Do you have a lethargic dog? Maybe his hips are hurting. Maybe his coat's getting dull. My dog, Fred, had digestive issues terribly, doesn't have them anymore. Watch what happens to your dog when you give your dog nutrition for the first time ever. Go to roughgreens.com/Jesse for your free jumpstart trial bag. roughgreens.com/Jesse or call 833-33-MY-DOG. We'll be back.
Colleagues and I understand the hardship that high inflation is causing, and we remain strongly committed to bringing inflation back down to our 2% goal. Nearly all FOMC participants expect that it will be appropriate to raise interest rates somewhat further by the end of the year. But at last week's meeting, considering how far and how fast we've moved, we judged it prudent to hold the target range steady to allow the committee to assess additional information and its implications for monetary policy.
That's a lot of big words. We better find out what those mean. Let's talk to somebody smart. Joining me now, William Luther. He's the director at the American Institute for Economic Research. He's also an associate professor. This just has to be the best job in the world. Associate professor of economics at Florida Atlantic. Professor, you're at Florida Atlantic University, so you get to teach, and you're also on the beach. Do I have that right?
That's right. It's like a mile and a half from the beach.
All right, those were big words. What was Jerome Powell talking about? Are my rates going up? Are they not going up? Is inflation coming down? Break all this down for us.
Well, let's start with the good news. Inflation is coming down. If you were to go back a year ago, inflation very high. That's really when the Fed started tightening monetary policy. It raised interest rates meeting after meeting after meeting. Until this most recent meeting in June, when it paused those rates, those rate hikes. I think a lot of folks were hoping that maybe they would pause them and hold them there for a while and then eventually bring them back down once inflation has gone down. But what Fed officials are telling us is that rate hikes are likely to resume most likely in July, and we can expect two further 25 basis point rate hikes this year.
Okay, so interest rates are going up. If inflation's going down, as you just said, then why are they still raising interest rates? Because interest rates only are supposed to be raised if we're trying to control inflation.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that Fed officials are looking at core inflation. Core inflation excludes food and energy prices, and core inflation has been flat since December. And I think that they're concerned that suggests that although we're getting some disinflation right now, that's going to stall out and we're not going to make it all the way back to 2% inflation if they don't continue raising rates. Now, I think that's misguided. I think that the reason that core inflation is flat has a lot to do with how the housing component of that core inflation measure is calculated. In brief, we're not really looking only at the housing increases in recent months, but those much larger housing price increases from months ago, a year ago. And so that overstates in core inflation today. And if we were to strip that out, we would see that core inflation coming down as well.
Okay, so you're Fed chairman today. How do you handle this? How do you go forward? What do you want to do?
Well, if I were a Fed chair today and had been for a few years, then I certainly would have conducted policy differently up until this point. The Fed got a very late start, and so inflation got way too high and lasted way too long. But at this point in the tightening cycle, rates are sufficiently restrictive. Inflation is coming down. And so the Fed today should just hold rates where they are and watch that inflation come down. And as it does come down, start to lower those rates back down as well. That's what I would be doing.
I saw a sign the other day. I was in Salt Lake City for a book tour thing, and I saw a sign they were advertising rates that were over 6% for a mortgage. I'm paying 2.25 on mine, and my jaw about dropped. So they're bragging about it. Yeah, hey, come get over 6%. And then I saw Jerome Powell say this about interest rate cuts.
We're having real rates that are going to have to be meaningfully positive
and significantly so, for us to get inflation down. That probably means that it will be appropriate to cut rates at such time as inflation is coming down really significantly. And again, we're talking about a couple years out.
We're a couple years? Yeah. We have to deal with these rates for a couple years?
Yeah, you know, we're in a difficult position, a position that we shouldn't be in, a position we wouldn't be in if the Fed had acted back in December of 2021. But it didn't act then. It drug its feet for 6 months. And so we got ourselves into a very difficult position here where inflation has been high and as a result is harder to bring down. And so that's going to take some time. The important thing to focus on, of course, is actually bringing that inflation down. That inflation makes it much harder for workers to experience real wage gains due to productivity. They see their wages eaten away over the course of the year by inflation, and then they have to engage in costly renegotiations to get those wages back up. And it would be better if we could just avoid that. And so we need to focus on that, bringing inflation down. The Fed's in a good position to do that now, and it's just going to have to stay the course here to see that happen.
Okay, you mentioned inflation's coming down, and that's a good thing. I know their target is 2%. I know everybody watching right now would very much like the value of their money to return. When do we get there? Is that coming next month? Is it a year? Are we going to have to live like this for two decades? When do we get back to that?
So the Fed is currently projecting 3.1% inflation for 2023. Inflation in 2024 will be a bit lower, or I believe around 2.5% they're projecting, and then around 2.1% there in 2025. So they're projecting that we're going to get closer and closer to that 2% target. But of course, even when we get back to that 2% target, that just means that we experience a mild reduction in the purchasing power of money from year to year, as opposed to the extraordinary reduction in the purchasing power of money that we've seen over the last two.
Oh, wonderful. Professor, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We're coming up on a wonderful anniversary. The Roe versus Wade getting the snip anniversary. We'll talk to a pro-life activist about that in just a moment. Before we do that, let's talk about your health. Let's talk about the air you breathe. Great Hollies song, by the way. But let's talk about the air you breathe. We have viruses and mold in our air. There are smells in your air, in your home, in your office. We put off smells, dogs put off smells, cooking puts off smells. It just happens. Why don't you start cleaning the air in your home, in your office? Eden Pure Thunderstorm will clean your air for you. There's no filter to replace. They call it a thunderstorm because it will do inside of your home, in your bedroom, in your kids' room, in your living room, in your kitchen, the same thing nature does after a thunderstorm. That's why you walk outside and it smells so clean. Go get three Eden Pure Thunderstorms because they sell three packs of them, $200 off, and experience a difference. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse is how you get that three pack. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. All right? We'll be back.
I would love to know first how you felt, not only as the first woman Vice President of the United States, but also as a former prosecutor, as a mamala,
yeah,
to two lovelies, as an auntie,
mm-hmm.
as a woman,
mm-hmm.
as an American,
mm-hmm.
To that moment when you knew that Roe was gone.
And I immediately knew when that decision came down what it would mean for real people almost immediately in our country, who for the most part, many will suffer in silence and are alone and without resources of many types. And I was extremely sad for that reason as well when that decision came down. Angry, and extremely sad about what it would mean for real people.
Yeah, she didn't care. of all the versions of Kamala we get to see on a daily basis, the earnest Kamala who really cares about people, they had to suffer in silence, has to be the least genuine. And that's saying something for maybe the least genuine politician I've ever seen in my life, which is also saying something. Joining me now, Christina Bennett, live action correspondent, pro-life activist, which we, of course, love on this show. Christina, obviously these Democrats all have to pay lip service to how wonderful abortion is, which, what a horrible thing to pay lip service to, but abortion is not wonderful at all, is it?
It's not. And if we're going to talk about suffering in silence, like our vice president said in that clip, unborn children suffer in silence when they are killed in the womb and no one can hear their cry for help, when they are poisoned through chemical abortion pills, when they are torn apart by forceps and instruments, when they are burned alive in the womb. They are suffering in silence. And I am grateful that Roe versus Wade was overturned because that is an act of justice towards them. But of course, we know we need to continue to fight it on a state level.
I don't think a lot of people know, because this is sanitized by both political parties, by the media, by everybody. I don't think a lot of people know what you just said, that the baby suffers, that it's not some painless thing, and then it's gone, and the clump of cells has been disappeared. That's not how it is at all, is it?
It's not. And not only does a child suffer when they are being torn apart in the womb, but in many instances, the mother suffers as well, whether that's a botched abortion when fetal remains are left inside of her, or whether she's had a quote-unquote successful abortion, but she's left with regret and pain, sorrow and shame, sometimes for years and years to come. Not only women experience this, but men as well. Men will also speak about their abortion regret. So will grandparents who their daughters and sons have participated in abortion. And so it truly causes suffering, of course, primarily to the unborn child who's being killed, but it also emotionally causes suffering to women and men and our families and our entire society. We all suffer when children are killed in the womb.
Tell me about your story. I love your story. Tell people about it.
Thank you. My mother scheduled to abort me at Mount Sinai Hospital in Hartford, Connecticut in 1981. And miraculously, a janitor saved my life. An African-American janitor saw my mom crying in the hospital hallway. She'd already paid for the abortion. She was wearing a white hospital robe. She was about to have the procedure. This janitor approached her, looked her in the eyes, and said, "Do you want to have this baby?" My mom said yes, and she said, "God will give you the strength." Now, she told my mom to leave, but my mom was starting to leave, and the abortionist called her into his office, and there was blood on the floor from the last child that he had killed. And she was so disgusted, and she said, "I'm leaving. I changed my mind." And he said, "No, you've already paid for this." That's where his mindset was: money, business, you've already paid for this. And she insisted, I want to keep my baby. I'm leaving." And he screamed at her. He said, "Don't leave this room." But she ran out of the room, and she ended up holding it in her heart as a secret for over 20 years. And when I was in college, I discovered that my life was saved at the 11th hour. And that really thrust me into pro-life work, because I grew up in a family where I'd never heard abortion talked about at home. And I grew up going to public school. I'd never heard abortion talked about in a negative way at school. And I never heard it talked about in church. I'm from Connecticut, so it's a very progressive pro-abortion state. And so this was an eye-opening moment for me. It changed everything when I heard that story.
How about that? I love that story.
Thank you.
What's next for us? Obviously, we're thrilled. I'm thrilled. You're thrilled. Roe versus Wade is overturned. What are our next steps? Where do we go from here? Because obviously the mission, the goal is no more abortions in this country ever. Not something I'll see in my lifetime or you, but that's the goal. What's next?
Well, 13 to 14 states have, you know, banned abortion, but there are many other states that have not, Connecticut being one of them, California, obviously, and other pro-abortion states. And so we need to be talking to our elected officials in these particular states. We need to be fighting against abortion expansion. In my state of Connecticut, they're trying to expand abortion in every possible way they can, allowing nurses, allowing midwives to do it. They're attacking pregnancy resource centers. So you need to know the names of your state representatives, and your, you know, your state senators, and to be on the local level fighting against abortion expansion. On the national level, many leaders are going to Washington, D.C. this weekend, because this Saturday is going to be the one-year anniversary of Roe being overturned. And at Live Action, we are calling for our congressmen, we are calling for them to allow the 14th Amendment to truly not only protect all citizens, but protect the unborn children as well, who are also citizens of this country. And so we are fighting for amendment and legislation that would really protect children in the womb on a federal level, you know, in every single state, that they'd be protected. It's wrong for there to be pro-life states and pro-abortion states, just like it was wrong in the days of slavery for there to be anti-slavery states and pro-slavery states that made for a divided nation where some people received justice and other people did not. We want every state in this country to be a state where children in the womb are protected, and where we can acknowledge that the 14th Amendment includes them as well, that they are citizens and that they have a right to justice and a right to life and to liberty. And so those are some of the ways that we are fighting back. But I would just encourage every person to not only celebrate the victory of Roe, but to continue to work hard until we see legal protection for children across the board.
Amen. It's always been one of my favorite arguments when people say, leave it up to the states. I love asking people, so you think they would be okay to own black people in Georgia? You'd be okay with that now? And just watch them just freeze. It's wonderful. Christina, right. You are the best. Keep doing what you do.
Thank you so much. God bless.
You too. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. But before we lighten the mood, let's talk about ourselves. We want to save the country. You do, I do, we all do, right? We can't save the country until we save our state. Can't save our state till we save our community. Can't save our community till we save our neighborhood. And we can't save our neighborhood until we deal with ourselves first. We need to take better care of ourselves, all of us. And I'm not pointing fingers at you, believe me, myself too. I'm making improvements. I'm eating better, drinking more water, working out more. But there's always more we can do. Chalk is part of my lifestyle now. It should be part of yours. Not just because they're the most hardcore anti-communists I know, but because they have natural herbal supplements. We must break ourselves away from this industry in this country and start taking care of ourselves in natural ways. Chalk is the way we get to do that. And they offer 35% off everything on their website for the lifetime of your subscription. I take a male vitality stack. Ladies take female vitality stacks, but it's much more than just that. Go see what they have at Chalk, C-H-O-Q. Watch how different you feel. Give it 90 days, whatever you start on, and watch how different you feel. C-H-O-Q.com, promo code Jesse, all right? We'll be back. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And nothing lightens my mood more than watching communists get humiliated. And there's nothing more despicable than a Democrat member of the House of Representatives, because they're all embarrassing communists. And not only that, they're all really, really dumb. I find it inspiring to watch them question people who are intelligent, because their stupidity comes through the screen and it reminds me that we can beat these people. We really can. So Durham sat in front of them today and embarrassed many of them.
You had a good reputation. That's why the two Democrats supported you. But the longer you hold on to Mr. Barr and this report that Mr. Barr gave you as special counsel, your reputation will be damaged. As everybody's reputation who gets involved with Donald Trump is damaged, he's damaged goods. There's no good dealing with him, because you will end up on the bottom of a pyre.
My concern about my reputation is with the people who I respect, and my family and my Lord. And I'm perfectly comfortable with my reputation with them, sir.
Really, the son of a presidential candidate gets calls all the time from a foreign government offering dirt on their opponent? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think this is unique in your experience.
Wow, that's beautiful. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.